listening to the cycling podcast Femina, brought to you by iWalker. Flexible loans built for small businesses. Join 50,000 customers taking on life's twists and turns and scaling new heights with iWalker. If you run a business, find out more at iwalker.co.uk. That's iwoca.co.uk.
We're most excited about the Christmas quiz. Yeah, that'll be humiliation for Orla and me. It might be the end of the Cycling Podcast Femina in its current format. Rose will be back next year.
Yeah, that's what that I've completely planned it as a big career
coup.
That's what I planned it for. Swooping in to be that lead presenter.
Yeah.
Well, hello, everybody. Do not adjust your sets. This is indeed the Cycling Podcast Femina. But my Christmas quiz coup has worked.
Woo woo!
I'm Rose Manley. And I am leading on the mic today, but I haven't been able to. Unfortunately, Christmas coup has not quite worked perfectly because I have been joined with the old guard. So I better introduce the wonderful Orla Shenaway.
I was hoping for a bit more of a big up there. There's me giving you the big old whoop whoop. Fine, whatever. Hi.
You haven't heard what I'm going to say to Richard yet.
Oh, it's an insurrection. Help.
He's locked up.
That's our wonderful Richard Moore, who's we've trapped in a little
box. The artist formerly known as lead presenter.
Still hanging around. Still here.
I'm just going to... place.
I'm just going to put my feet up here. I literally am going to put my feet up.
You're enjoying yourself there,
oh,
Richard.
This is great. This is great. This worked a treat.
You know you're still supposed to contribute to the podcast, Richard. Yeah, you're not just like
I'll keep an eye on things.
Oh,
here,
yeah, yeah.
Orla.
Oh, pretending you're still in charge. Not going to work like that, minion.
No, no.
Okay, well, Richard, let's get him started with his first job is to tell us what is on the show today.
Oh,
there you are, Richard.
Careful.
First job.
Oh, have you been paying attention in pre-production?
Well, we're going to, the idea of this reshuffle is that every episode is just going to be like the Christmas quiz. It's just going to be a,
yes,
a rose-led quiz. No, we're going to hear from our trip to Spain, Orla. We went to the Jumbo Visma training camp that featured in a regular episode a couple of weeks ago, and we'll have some news of the women's team there. We're going to hear from Ella Harris down in New Zealand, a different world by the sounds of things. And that was interesting to hear from her. And what else? We've got a new feature, haven't we? A quick fire Q&A with Marjolein van't Geloof.
Maybe we haven't actually decided on a name for yet. Maybe we could open that to the listeners. So far, we've come up with about 2 minutes with, because that's how long we think it might last. Maybe for a bit snappier, we could go with a couple of minutes with. But maybe one of our listeners can suggest a good title for that once they've heard it and get a feel for what we're planning.
How about my pronunciation there, Orla? Was that okay?
Marjolein van t Geloof, I think. I wasn't listening to your pronunciation, actually.
When,
gone to sleep
when, we hear, when we hear that, we'll explain a little bit more about her and how you might be able to hear a bit more from her over the course of the year.
Well, I think that's full marks, Richard. I think you've got everything there. I think if you work really hard, play your cards right, you might be allowed to be lead presenter.
You might be able to take your books back up to the front of the class.
Those days are gone. Those days are gone. I've retired.
On your fat pension.
Oh, I didn't know what you were going to say there, Orla. Very late save.
On your fat, peachy pension.
Well, one thing that is going nowhere is Orla's news roundup. So let's roll off
with
that.
Yeah, you ain't getting rid of me that easily, Manly. It is quite a snappy little news roundup for obvious reasons, given where we are in the year. We had the Cyclocross World Championships. After 3 podiums in a row, Lucinda Brand of the Netherlands finally took the world title, leading home a Dutch 1-2-3 with compatriots Annemarie Voorst and Denise Betsema finishing second and third. Fem van Empel...
She got the better of Voorst.
Am I missing that joke?
That's something I would come up with.
It's a little play on words, but carry on as you were.
Oh dear.
Where's the mute on this? Is it possible to mute other people?
Fem van Empel continued the Dutch domination. She won the under 23 ahead of compatriot once again, Anik van Alpen, with Hungary's Blanka Katavas in third. I don't know if you know, but van Empel is an 18-year-old former professional footballer. The Dutch in the under 23s made up five of the top 10. We always give a little mention to the Australian road race, don't we? And I feel it's a bit disproportionate because we don't really mention any of the rest of them. But coming as it does, it's nice to give them a little bit of extra attention. And Sarah Roy took what was a surprise win, even to her, seemingly, after going in an early break. She is the Australian National Road Champion with her Team Bike Exchange squad. We have to get used to saying that. Taking two spots on the podium, Grace Brown finishing second and Loretta Hansen in third. Emily Watts took the under 23 title. She also finished fifth in the elites. And Sarah Gigante defended her time trial and the under 23 time trial titles. Brilliant news away from racing results for women's cycling coverage and for the women's tour. After the Giro Rosa failed to provide live TV coverage last year and had its race status downgraded as a result, the women's tour has stepped up and secured a 5-year deal, no less, with Eurosport and GCN for live coverage of the race, which is to be hugely applauded and very exciting news and will certainly consolidate, I think, that race's status in the women's calendar. And that, I think, is pretty much your snappy little news roundup.
Well, we should add, Orla, not news as such, but there was quite a lot of news in it. The edition of Ruler that you guest edited, the women's edition of Ruler, which came out last week, I think, and sold out in a day. A lot of news in it. I mean, it generated a lot of news in the newspapers, on the radio, and some great lines about the almost women's Team Sky, the fact that there was talk of a women's Team Sky and it was rejected at board level at Sky, according to Fran Miller. Lizzie Dagnan as well, her story about her prize at La Course last year, a men's watch, and her, you know, what she had to say as well about the response when she told people within the sport that she was pregnant was fascinating too. So congratulations on that. It was a really fresh read. I got a PDF of it last week. Haven't had the paper copy yet, unfortunately, over here. I think you've had your copy, haven't you?
I received my copy yesterday. It was so... It was like nothing else whenever I opened it up, because we've been working on this for 10 months. We first had our first conversation about it in March last year during the first lockdown. And we've been working consistently and quite hard on it for 10 months. And there's been so much of a build up to it personally, what with, you know, commissioning the pieces and some last minute pieces that had to be commissioned and deciding on artwork and photography. And there'd been quite a bit of fuss about the cover of the magazine, which I encouraged. I chose the cover of the magazine to create debate, but it made me really, there was quite a bit of hype beforehand. You know, people seemed to be excited about the fact that we were doing a women's edition and that we were trying to buck this assumption that women's cycling and women's sport doesn't sell. And so there was an awful lot of goodwill before it came out. So of course I took that goodwill and turned it into absolute fear and thought, well, everybody's going to hate it once they read it. And it largely doesn't seem to have been the case. It's been beautifully received. And when I opened my box yesterday, I had another little cry. I've been a bit emotional about it, but I was just so proud of all the hard work that's gone into it and all the people that just gave so much to it to try to make something really important work. And I feel like even if it's not what everybody wants or everybody expects, I don't know, but the fact it's there is to me a really deeply satisfying thing. And yeah, the news lines in themselves were fantastic. They're not fantastic necessarily because they're not positive news stories, but the fact that they're picked up on is good. But to me, the most important thing was that we sold well, that it, not just that it's there, but as you say, it sold out in a day, which has never happened before. We had the biggest single day of sales. And when I think back to the reason for doing it, which was to try to prove that there was an appetite for women's cycling, lo and bloody behold, bitches, there is. So it's wonderful. You might have to beep that out, bleep it out. I don't care. I'm very, very, very proud of everybody for actually supporting it, you know, because it's one thing to sit in the sidelines and say, we need more of this and we need more of that. It's very different. And it's a big ask to ask people to put their hands in their pocket to try to prove that there's a demand for it. And so the fact that people have done that is fantastic, and a huge, huge bravo and thank you to everybody who did that, because it really, really bloody matters. People pay attention, people listen, and hopefully it'll be the start of, or a continuation of rather, change, good change in this sport.
And obviously we mentioned a few of the news lines, but Orla, for you, which was the story in this edition of Ruler that you thought was the most important, or the one that needed to be told the most, perhaps?
The news lines that we're talking about came from a conversation that I had with Fran Miller, Monica Santini and Lizzie Deignan. That to me was probably the most satisfying piece in the article, just because I feel like we don't get to hear women at the top of their game very much. And I mean, in any game, you know, we don't hear about women in a men's world in a way that's framed so positively, because it was, you know, and it was a very honest conversation. And a lot of guys have been in touch and said that they find it really revealing and really insightful. And that is what I was hoping to be able to do with it. I have to say as well, though, there is a beautiful column written by Vittoria Bussi, the world record holder. If you get a chance to read that, she writes about balance, and she is, I'm going to get this wrong now, she's a maths PhD, I think, from Oxford University. I'm going to have to Google that and do a live corrections corner later. But she's obviously a very intelligent woman, and I just loved her thoughts on balance and how she almost celebrates imbalance and celebrates a lack of calm and a lack of, not a lack, but a state of imbalance, I guess, as being the proponent for change and for great things. And I just thought it was a beautifully written piece and very surprising to me. I loved that. And we've got, you know, Shania's Reid talking about her alcoholism, which was fascinating and really vulnerable and brave. And we have a piece on plus size cycling. We've got a piece on, which I really loved, the piece on women in Karachi and using bicycle as a form of radicalism almost. We've got, we feature Ashley Milman-Passio and how e-racing is levelling the playing field for women. So much. There's so much in there that I just really loved.
Was that a big enough plug for you, Orla?
Oh, don't say that. I say it. I didn't necessarily want to talk about this because I didn't want to make it look like it was a plug. So that wasn't a plug. And I'm sorry if you've switched off already, but bloody hell, go and buy it. We're restocking and reissuing. Go and buy it. It's a collector's edition already.
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast Femina, brought to you by iWalker. Flexible loans built for small businesses. Join 50,000 customers taking on life's twists and turns and scaling new heights with iWalker. If you run a business, find out more at iwalker.co.uk. That's iwoca.co.uk.
And with that fade out of 80s techno, it's time for me to say thank you to iWalker for supporting us, supporting Cycling Podcast Feminine and the Cycling Podcast. And we're really grateful for their support. Now is time. I know everyone's been eagerly waiting this, especially Richard. The cryptic criterion. That's the first time I've said that.
Without stumbling.
In one go. Yes.
I was thinking the title was like your cryptic-a-night.
Oh,
Richard's
it's all coming
face.
Out now.
Oh, it's too late, Richard. You've stepped away.
Well, yeah, I might resign completely at this rate.
Yeah,
I might not last the episode.
Oh, that was quite good.
This is one like all great Christmas hangovers. This is just going to carry on for days. So this is a hangover from my Christmas quiz of December. I'm going to give you a little cryptic clue that's going to lead you to the surname of one of the members of the women's peloton.
We hope.
So here it is. Let's see how we get on. When you propose to a woodland rodent, you give them a...
Bloody hell. A knee squirrel ring...
Not any. What do you give?
Ring.
Yeah.
Ring.
Yeah.
Squirrel.
Not a squirrel.
Ferret.
It's probably... I don't know what it looks like, actually.
Anna Van Ring Squirrel.
That sounds really weird.
Who does she write for?
It's like, it sounds a bit like
fox,
an animal
ring
that,
fox, no.
No, an animal that goes underground and is can't
mole,
see. Sounds
mole,
like that.
Ring mole. Ring what?
It's another...
Sounds like ring mall.
Other way round.
Mall ring.
But a different type of rodent.
Oh. What? It rhymes with mall ring.
Yes.
Salting.
No.
Vollering.
Yes.
Demi Vollering.
My God.
Vol ring. Demi Vollering.
Vollering.
Oh, look. Yeah,
now Richard's acting like...
So now that I did all the hard work, Richard just swans in with a size 12. So,
he was keeping very quiet there. You could see the concentration on his face just quietly.
You could see his lips moving at the same time, though. He was like trying them all out.
Demi Vollering. Demi Vollering.
Oh, very
well
good.
Well done, Richard. 1-0 to Richard. I'm going to keep telling now because in Richard's...
Oh, you didn't tell.
Well,
I just kept my deliberations
to
myself.
I know, but now I'm just trying to keep all, on her toes now. Now, next time she's going
to acting like I was on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? You know, when they don't know the answer.
And they just
and
they say all this
by
other
making
stuff.
It so- yeah, they just yeah. talk to make it sound like they've got stuff in their head. That's basically what I was doing. Ring squirrel.
Better luck next time, Orla.
Probably not on that showing.
Well, Demi Vollering, I wanted to put Demi Vollering into the centre of our minds because obviously she's one of the big, well, there's loads of big transfers actually that have happened this year, and Vollering is going to SD Works, which was formerly Bowles Dolmans, which will be a really interesting result to see how she thrives there. But there's also Amelie Diedrichsen and Chloe Hoskin going to Trek Segafredo, which is like a boosting their sprint train immeasurably, I would have thought. What transfers for you guys? Well, you guys have been to Jumbo-Visma, should I say, and seen the new setup there. So what transfers have caught your eyes?
Well, I watched the Aussie Nationals and I was taken aback to see Chloe Hoskin and Trek Segafredo kit, just because it was... She seems to move teams virtually every year, doesn't she? And I guess quite surprised to see her there, but they do have a pretty strong sprint team, don't they? Sprint set up Trek Segafredo. SD Works, I mean, they're going to go through a big transition at the end of the year, aren't they, when they lose Anna van der Breggen and Chantal Black, both becoming sports directors. But they're really going through a bit of change, it seems, bringing in new riders. Demi Vollering is a huge talent, isn't she? And she could emerge as a really important rider for her, I think, this year.
I'm really excited to see what Ashley Milman-Passio does there as well, because she's such an interesting rider with so much talent. And I just wonder, the change in teams, the riders she'll be surrounded by, and also just her success on... Zwifting, you know, on e-racing, becoming the e-racing world champion. I just wonder how much momentum all of that will give her, and shaking things up a little bit and freshening things up a little bit. I think SD Works will be really interesting to watch because we've been so used to seeing Bowles Dolmans being the number one team in the world. Last year was the first time in, 5 years that they weren't. That was Trek Segafredo. So things have changed anyway. Now, of course, they've got a change in setup as well as a change in sponsor. I would imagine they will continue with a great deal of success, certainly, but none of this will come necessarily easily. And it's one thing that we talked about at the Jumbo-Visma camp, the fact that there is so much change this year. I think we will see, I hope we will see, quite unusual results, certainly in the first part of the season, as teams try to bed down a little bit and get used to each other, get used to new practices and DSs and different ways of doing things. I think that certainly the first half of the season should be really, really exciting and dynamic, and I'm hoping that we're going to see some upset.
I think definitely more than ever the talent is kind of spread across the teams and all the teams are trying to become teams that are both good on the climbs and good in the sprints. Like with Trek Segafredo now bringing in all this sprint power to go along with Ellen van Dijk and Trixie Worak, who would be, you know, excellent lead-out women. Because they've kind of relied on Elisa Longo-Borghini and Lizzie Dynan last year for the majority of their wins. So to become a team that really is a strong all-rounder team, a bit like how Bowles Dolmans have been in the past and before that Rabobank were, it's a really mightily powerful setup they've got. But there's so much talent across the board, I think.
And we haven't even mentioned Annemiek van Vleuten.
Yeah, I know. When do we ever not do that?
Yeah, exactly. Be really interesting, again, just to see what she does in her new setup. I think you guys mentioned this already, but we did talk at the Jumbo-Visma camp about any conversations that she had with joining that team, and they say they decided to go with Marianna Vos instead. But yeah, whatever she does is always going to be exciting anyway. And of course, Marianna Vos, you know, what can she do with a brand new setup, first time in a new team for a long time? I'm excited to see what she can do on that team with the setup that they have. It seemed like a very comfortable setup already, Richard, didn't it? And it felt like a very dynamic atmosphere and very much a first day of school kind of excitement to it, which is really lovely to see. You don't usually get to see a squad right at their very beginning. They're all so excited about what lies in store. So, yeah, there's so much to look forward to across the board.
Well, shall we hear now from the little package that you guys made in beautiful sunny climes that I was terribly, terribly jealous of. But let's hear from
very exotic.
Yeah. Let's hear from the Jumbo Visma team camp. And we're going to hear from Ezra Tromp. And then we're going to hear from Nancy Vanderberg.
We're going to start a new day. I think it will be a really nice day. We have a nice route. First of all, we'll start with the Blanco course. Today it is for you, Pernilla.
Yes, I choose the point to stick to your appointments and promises. And I think this one is really important for the team, like both on and off the bike, in training and races and just in general.
All right, okay. And have a good and safe ride.
Okay, see ya.
Enjoy.
So Ezra, here we are, the start of a brand new team. You're at the helm. How does it feel?
That's super exciting. It's a project we already worked for a few months now, and to finally come together here in the team camp and see, it's really nice to see all the girls together finally. And it's super exciting to work towards our goals here in Spain, and super happy. Yeah.
It must be really exciting, but at the same time, Jumbo Visma women's team cannot just fly under the radar, even in their first year. Big things will be expected of you because of the roster that you have with Marianna, with your background and your success, and also, of course, the team name. That brings quite a bit of pressure as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, it brings a lot of pressure. But from the start off, we said, we want to build the team and to grow in the next few years. And I think we need to stick to that plan. And of course, we have some expectations. But I think we have a roster with girls with a lot of potential, but also girls who are really on the top level already. So we can also expect a little bit from that girls and the other talented girls, more young girls. They can really develop in the shadow of those top leaders like Marianna.
You know what it is to bring success with a team, and arguably a much more modest team. Park Hotel didn't have anything like the budget that Jumbo Visma will have, and you develop riders into names rather than working with established names. How different a challenge is this?
Actually, I think we have quite the same challenge. For sure, we worked for the top results last year as well, so we got already a little bit experience with that. What I really love to have in the team is like the safe environment to develop the riders, and that's really important to have the results. It fits with the talented girls or with the more experienced girls. You need that environment with the knowledge, with the safe group of girls, staff. Then you bring the results you want to have.
And when you say safe, what do you mean by that?
I think that you can be yourself and speak about what you have to develop, if it's physical, if it's personal level, all aspects to become an athlete that we want to have on World Tour level. If you have the environment that you can express yourself and be who you want to be and become and feel safe to take on all the elements that you want to develop, I think that's the environment you want to have.
I read that you said you had over 100 applications for spots on the team. Is that true? And if so, how did you decide on who your roster was going to be?
Yeah, of course, that's hard because, yeah, for sure, you want to give everybody a spot because, yeah, you would like to have everybody developing. But we looked at the past of the riders who made a call or a text or an email. We looked at the personalities of everybody and, of course, also the physical aspect of everybody.
And I understand you did speak with Annemiek van Vleuten. How did those conversations go?
We didn't speak that much, but we looked at what we want to have in the team, where we wanted to go, and what we needed for that. And I think, we made already in the beginning of the process of developing the squad of the girls a decision to go for Marianne Vos, because I think that's the best match with the team, with the values that we have and the potential that she still have. And I think that's where we develop the roster further.
So did the team decide not to continue negotiations or discussions with Annemiek?
Yeah.
Because she wasn't the right fit?
Yeah.
Was there a worry, I guess, that her results or her goals might become dominant for the team?
No, I think we decided early already in the process that we're going to work with Marianne. And from that moment, we decided not to went further with Annemiek van Vleuten. Yeah, we didn't have that conversation. Actually, she expressed her intentions or her interest in the team. We were still looking around, and at that moment, we thought, yeah, Marianne is the best fit.
So, given the huge success that Marianne has already enjoyed, given the immense experience that she brings, what can you do to make her a better rider? How can you improve someone like Marianne Vos?
Actually, it's a hard question because she was already on a super high level, and to develop her is a challenge. But I think we have so much experience and knowledge in this team. What wasn't before in a women's team, I think never in a women's team, maybe in one or two teams that also are working together with a men's team that is a little bit the same, but how the cooperation is between the women and the men team in this team is so really, really deep connection, and I think the all the knowledge in this team about training, about nutrition, about developing yourself as a rider, as a person, can make Marianne improve herself even more. And I think that's our goal also this year, together with her.
What more potential does she have? What else can she achieve? More of the same? Better?
She will become better, yeah. Yeah. She will win also more races. And I think she is super successful already. The women's peloton is becoming really stronger and stronger every year. So to win races, you need to be on a really, really high level. Yeah, it's more difficult to win races at the moment than maybe 5 years ago. And therefore, you need also to step up your game. And we're going to help Marianne to become that rider that also wins those races and to go after our team goals.
How important is it for the women's peloton that Jumbo-Visma have brought on board a women's team? They are the number one team in the men's peloton. It's a statement of intent as much as anything else, isn't it? And a statement of equality and where they believe women's cycling to be. How important is it for the wider peloton that Jumbo-Visma now have a women's team?
I think it's super important to have more teams in the women's peloton, and especially if that's really a professional team, where the quality of training, guidance around the athlete is super on a high level. And I think that will improve women's cycling in general. And yeah, for sure, that's an important thing to do and to have. Where we can add value to women's cycling. And I think that's a really big fortune to have in this sport now.
Yeah. We see the huge success that Bors Dolmans enjoyed and now becoming ST Works, but it feels like the future of women's cycling belongs possibly more to the teams who are connected to men's teams. Is that how it feels from the inside, or is there still a role for the independent women's only teams?
For sure. Of course, there will always be an independent women's team, and there are benefits to this because, yeah, for sure, you're in a smaller team and you can really give more focus to those elements in women's cycling particularly. But I think to improve the overall level, you will see more more women's squads added to the men's teams. And I think, yeah, it brings more professionalism to the teams, to the women's peloton.
So Mariana is one of the high profile signings for this season. If we look beyond Jumbo-Visma, Annemiek has of course changed teams, Ashley Milman-Passio is changing teams, Chloe Dygart is coming to Europe. There's a lot of disruption in the women's peloton. Do you think that's going to make the start of the season in particular more unexpected, or do the riders just carry on as they were before? How much of a difference will it make to change teams?
A lot. Yeah, because that gives a whole new dynamic to races and to tactics. And yeah, it's super interesting to see how, always it's super interesting if you start a new season to see all the new colors, new teams and new riders in colors. And yeah, it's interesting already, but especially now with the change of some really main characters in women's cycling between teams. Yeah, for sure. That will be exciting. I'm excited to see what kind of tactics some other teams will have, and yeah, how we can beat them in some ways. So yeah.
So what are the big goals then for the team in the first year?
First of all, we want to develop as a team. We set some goals in races. We have a group of girls that is really talented and also we're more experienced riders. But physically, we saw that the group of girls we have now are more suited for the spring classics and a little bit more hilly races. So we also focused on that. We will focus on the few cobble races in the spring, and so in the first part of the season. And afterwards, we go after one or two successes in the Ardennes Classics, and afterwards we go to the Giro as a main focus. And at the very last, in between, we have also the Olympics, of course. And at the end of the season, we go to the Tour of Norway, where our sponsor is based. And we will work for great results over there as well.
Yeah, 2 years ago I interviewed you in your different role as food coach at the time, weren't you, with the team? What happened? Because you were sort of semi-retired, if not fully retired, at the time from racing. So what's happened the last couple of years?
Yeah, well, I still worked as a nutritionist until last year. But yeah, I really, really love to ride my bicycle. And also to race, to train. So yeah, at that time I saw the riders and they had their dream, and yeah, they race, they train, they try to do every day, every single day to be the best they can. I really felt that I want to do the same, and I had always that dream. So I started training again and racing again. I really love to be nutritionist in this team, but I have also another dream, and that dream is growing right now. And I'm not the youngest person anymore. So came the opportunity to be pro cyclist again last year. And also that went pretty well. Even the corona was it was a rough year. yeah, Jumbo Visma came back with the question. We have now we will start a women team, we really want you to have you in the team. So yeah, I'm back now. Yeah,
it's, so being around the male team, the riders, was really what gave you the bug again, I suppose, was it? It was what gave you the, just being around them gave you the determination to maybe have another go.
Yeah, I really realized that I want to chase my dream was when I was in Sierra Nevada on altitude with Primoz, Antoine, and another couple of riders, and I saw them training like a beast for the Giro Italia, and at that moment I saw Primoz on his roller on the tax, 6 hours full, just one goal, and then I thought, I am that passionate too for my sport. So at that moment I realized I really, really, really want to do this again and try to be a pro cyclist.
You've seen and been a part of the system that was at the highest level for the men's team. Mm-hmm. Is that what you see transferring directly to the women's team? Do the two teams share directly that information, that experience, that knowledge?
Yeah, like the men had their performance team. We have also our performance team. And they are also learning from each other. So that's really, really nice to see, to sharing knowledge and experiences. And also, well, I have now a bicycle, which is really, really beautiful. And yeah, we have the same, like the men, the Cervelos. So also, yeah, material is also the same. So, and also the nutrition, the brands, and also the physical testing, for example, is also the same. So we definitely benefit also from the knowledge from the men's.
And what's it like having Marina Voss as a teammate? I guess automatically that, you know, establishes the team as a serious team, one of the best teams in the world by having her. But how well do you know her? And how important is it to have her as a teammate?
Really, really important. And she's actually now my roommate. So yeah, and she's a real professional, but also really nice, human to have around. And it's all also really nice to have her because she has a lot of experience in the races and. I think we all in the team really want to work with her and help her in the races. So I'm really happy, but also really proud that that she's in our team.
And what are your personal goals then? Your race goals for this year? Your target?
Well, I've a lot, and not only in the races, but. I really want to be at my best during Flèche Wallon, Liège, Bastogne-Liège, and Amstel Gold Race. I think that race suits me really well. And also, I want to experience what I am. As a rider, for example, riding the Giro. It's a 10-day stage race. Yeah, it suits me as a person, and I also want to develop as a human being, as a pro cyclist this year. So mental toughness, for example. So yeah, I have many goals, many dreams, and yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to ride with the team the races.
How easy or difficult has it been to leave behind your old job? Do you find yourself in the dining room keeping an eye on what the others are eating, telling off some
Primoz,
of the...
Primoz, put the chips down. Some of the...
Yeah, well, first of all, it's super nice to see my former colleagues again. So yesterday at dinner I had spot on the table, I could a bit observe the guy. So it's really impressive to see when they are in line for their dinner, they took their phone out to search on the Food Coach app and see, okay, how much do I have on my plate now? And then I was just thinking one moment and one feeling, okay, yeah, that's what I did for those guys. And I feel really proud. When I see all those the guys, it's good on this side. It's also hard work. Yeah, I've also had hard work on this side. But yeah, I'm really happy to see the riders and my ex-colleagues and see that they really work hard also now in this stage of the season.
Well, at the start of that little package, we heard the pre-ride briefing before they set off on the training ride. You might not have been able to make out what was being said, but each morning, the women riders, not the development team or the World Tour team, but the women riders, were one of them was picked each day to select one of the team's values and talk about it and why it was important, which is an interesting thing to observe over a couple of days. And the second interview we heard there was Nancy van der Berg, who I mentioned. I met her just over 2 years ago at Jumbo-Visma camp for the men's team when she was working as their food coach, sort of nutritionist. And I mean, that was fascinating, wasn't it, Orla? She basically said that being stuck in an altitude camp watching Primoz Roglic on a turbo trainer for 6 hours inspired her to make a comeback. Unusual.
Well, I find it really fascinating because I can understand why watching that would make you want to be in it, whereas being in it must feel complete tedious hell. You know, you're just going through the motions. But from the outside, there's a glamour to putting yourself through that amount of suffering, you know. And she'd been a rider before, of course, and sort of stepped away from it. So I guess that reignited her passion for it. One thing I did think, though, she was saying how she was really proud of one of the male riders whenever she saw what he had on his plate, you know, because she was like, oh, I taught them their sports nutrition. And yet there was fla everywhere at that training camp. So I'm not sure how much of her hard work was actually listened to. The Dutch sweet dessert drink was, although maybe me and Richard had most of that.
I think it was far off, Sorla.
What is that?
Oh, so fla is, it comes in like a milk carton type packaging. And it's like a mixture between, it's sort of custardy, yogurty. So you sort of, you gloop it out into your bowl, you know. So you pour the, bottle, but you sort of give it a squeeze and it just kind of goes into your bowl. So the original flavor, if I'm not getting it wrong, is vanilla. At the moment in our fridge, we've got chocolate and vanilla, like a double dip type fla. It's such a hit in our house. It's delicious.
What is this, it's a dessert? Like, it's dessert.
It's a dessert. Yeah, yeah. But it's like childhood comfort in a bowl. Ooh. It's so wonderful. Richard, you liked it, didn't you?
I did like it. When you drive over here, I want you to visit your local Jumbo supermarket and buy us some and bring it in your camper van.
I'm not sure I know how to travel any other way these days, Richard. That's how we start every trip. By emptying the local Jumbo.
It was nice to get a couple of days of sunshine, wasn't it? Heat and sunshine. And to be in that environment again of cyclists preparing, training, being very focused and you know, looking optimistically towards the future. That was quite inspiring. When we're all spending most
amazing.
Of our time stuck at home.
Yeah, we're spending most of our time stuck at home, and it's really hard to switch off from negativity on the news. And there never seems to be an end in sight, or when we think there's an end, the tunnel is extended right before our eyes. And it was so refreshing and reassuring and comforting and familiar to be in an environment where they were making set goals about set dates and set races, and they had their normal discipline. You know, so much of our discipline, the rest of us mere mortals, kind of goes out the window, and our days become quite flabby, and we try to insert like hard lines here or there. But there it was just like normal, albeit of course with the swab tests and the face masks and the gel and all the rest of it. And it was a very safe bubble, or felt that way anyway. It was certainly a very clean bubble. But just the fact that they were going about their usual job, and that they had set targets that they were working towards, it just felt almost quaint, you know. It was really lovely. I have to say, on a personal note, it made coming back to normal life really hard. I don't know about you, Richard. I was in a real downer afterwards because I felt like I'd come up for air and I'd seen what normal life used to look like, and then you're sucked back into it again. But it certainly made me crave and desperately look forward to racing starting again.
I had the similar experience, although it wasn't normal. They were a little bubble within what didn't feel very normal. I mean, the airport was deserted, one cafe was open, and it did feel very, the whole experience felt very strange, really. But there was a moment when we're in the hotel and, you know, everyone had been COVID tested many times, and that felt quite safe. And like I say, nice to be in that environment again, briefly.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton, cycling podcast team car, the back of the pack, please.
Well, that's the voice of Seb Piquet interrupting this month's episode of the Cycling Podcast Femina to remind us to tell you that it is sponsored by LinkedIn. 2021 is looking up, which means there should be plenty of new opportunities for you to grow your business. Whether you're shifting business hours or hiring more remote employees, one thing that remains unchanged is the importance of having the right people on your team. When you're ready to make the next hire, LinkedIn Jobs can help by matching your role with qualified candidates so that you can find the right person quickly. And to lend a helping hand, your first job post is free. So this is an opportunity for anybody who might be looking for an employee, anybody at all. And that's a fantastic offer. Are you familiar with LinkedIn? Do you both use LinkedIn?
Yes, I use LinkedIn, especially more recently. I've been using LinkedIn and it's great. I found it really useful, especially now when we are so disconnected at the moment and having to be at home all the time and you can't be going out and networking and seeing people at bike shows or seeing people at the races. It's so been so useful to maintain those contacts with people and be able to, you know, meet new people coming up with new projects. Because, you know, one thing that was a result of a catastrophic 2020 was that people were finding new interests, new things to invest in, new passion projects they were setting up. So to see all of that on LinkedIn has been, I think, been really useful in feeling connected and feeling optimistic about work as well.
Yeah, I use it and I love it for connecting. I love it for building a network of people that you might not ever end up at the same event as, and you might not come across on social media in other ways. And I really like that it's a streamline of just professional posts that might get lost and do get lost generally if it's on Twitter or on something else. I like that what I see there is relevant to me because it's from my network, you know. So I think it's brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And I do love seeing what jobs are advertised. I'm not looking for a job, but it's just really interesting. Like, I used to flick through the Media Guardian. That used to be the staple for journalists. It's my Media Guardian these days.
I mean, there's a lot of doom and gloom around, but I had a little look at the jobs available and it's quite, I'm not looking for a job. Although
I'm
not looking for a job. I might be.
Yeah. And then you go onto LinkedIn and it says open for work on your little picture and then everyone knows.
Rose is looking for a job but advertised for a new presenter for the Cycling Podcast.
Well, she's found one.
Yeah.
She's found one. But it's quite inspiring to see all the jobs there. One that caught my eye was the editorial manager at Lego. I feel quite qualified for that at the moment.
Oh, dream amazing job. I was at Legoland in the summer. That's mine.
Well, you're qualified. This offer to Cycling Podcast Femina listeners is for businesses to advertise with staff. There are over 30 million members on LinkedIn in the UK. When your business is ready to make the next hire, find the right person with LinkedIn Jobs. Now you can post a job for free. Visit linkedin.com/cycle. Again, that's linkedin.com/cycle to post a job for free.
Well, new opportunities and a new feature on the Cycling Podcast Feminine that's coming up. A nameless feature. A couple of minutes with... Come on, we must be able to do something better than that, just even off the top of our heads, surely.
A couple of minutes with...
About 2 minutes, give or take, with... a snappy chatty.
Oh,
with...
that's quite good. That is quite good.
I think you're being very flattering, Rose, to be fair.
Anything that's even vaguely a rhyme, I'm pretty happy with, actually.
Emphasis on quite.
Yeah.
I'm sure one of our listeners can do better. Come on, get your thinking caps on. Give us a... Do our work for us.
So, something witty.
Yeah, well, that's not our job, I guess. We're not very witty.
No, none of us are. But we'll go with a snappy chatty. So we have a snappy chatty coming up with Mayo Vanter Heluf. This is terrible. And because she's actually an audio diarist, isn't she, Richard, on this programme?
She is. It's a good way of introducing her. She is one of four young audio diarists for the Cycling Podcast this year. Hannah Ludwig is another one, Canyon SRAM rider. So first episode should be coming out fairly soon, but Mayo, as she likes to be known, has been great sending in her entries so far. So we thought we'd put these quickfire questions to her.
Well, I think we should, for her audio diary, ask her about her name, because geloof in Dutch actually means belief or faith. So geloven is to believe. So Marjolein van te geloof, unless I'm mistaken, and I'm sure someone will correct me if I am, means Marjolein of faith. There you go.
Oh, that's very nice.
Isn't that beautiful?
That is beautiful. That should have been...
Geloof me.
That is one of the questions in this snappy chatty.
Almost sounds like Marianne Faithful.
Oh, yeah.
It's almost a Dutch.
Should we just rename her? Kind of.
She's Marjolein, not Marianne.
Marianne.
Poor Mayo has no idea what she's ended up in. She thinks she's doing an audio diary and she's been renamed.
And how ironic that we're trying to call it Snappy Chatty and it takes us 10 minutes to get there. God. Reversing in. Beep, beep, beep.
Hi, everyone. This is Marjolein from Drops of the Call, supported by Tempoor. And I will be doing a fast Q&A. So here we go.
If you could win one race, which would it be?
If there was one race I could win, it would be Paris-Roubaix. Yeah.
Why did you want to be a professional cyclist?
I wanted to be a professional cyclist because I just wanted to go fast. So yeah, started really young, just wanted to go fast.
Who was your cycling hero growing up?
My cycling hero growing up was Mark Cavendish. Yeah.
Where did you get your big break in cycling?
I got my break in cycling thanks to Lotto Soudal.
What would your perfect day on the bike be?
A perfect day on the bike for me would be a long ride in the sun with a hot chocolate at the end.
What was the last book you read?
The last book I read was... It was a Dutch book, De Renner from Krabbe.
What would your dream job be if you weren't a cyclist?
My dream job, if I was not a cyclist, would be, I already have it. I'm a physical therapist for cyclists, so yeah.
How many languages can you speak?
Dutch, English, and a little bit of German. I'll count three, yeah.
Are you a morning person or a night person?
I'm a night person for sure.
What is your favorite sport?
My favorite sport, apart from cycling, is gymnastics. Oh, I love watching gymnastics. Really cool.
Do you have a nickname?
My nickname is Mayo or Mayo, depending.
Most used app?
My most used app is Instagram. Yeah, for sure.
Most famous person you've met?
The most famous person I've met is... Yeah, I think I've always been a huge fan of Matthew Heyman. And I've met him in Australia and I was really hyped about it. So that's the only name I can come up with now. So Matthew Heyman.
What's the best advice you've ever been given?
The best advice I've been given, to always enjoy what you're doing, so have fun. It's just really simple advice. I can remember who gave it to me, but yeah, I think that's a good one. Just have fun.
The cycling podcast Femina is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much indeed to Science and Sport for sponsoring the Cycling Podcast Femina, our longest standing supporter right from the start of the Cycling Podcast Femina, when it was all so different, wasn't it, Orla? Just me and you.
Little did you know, Richard, sitting comfortably in that presenter's chair.
Yeah, I was very comfortable. Our usurper was just, well, I think I've said it before. Science and Sport, thank you very much indeed to them. If you want 25% off your Science and Sport products, and of course you do, they make the finest sports nutrition products in the world, go to scienceandsport.com and enter the code
SISCP25.
SISCP25 at scienceandsport.com.
I wonder, will they up their sponsorship now that the podcast is so much better?
Oh wow!
We do need to get our chanting game a little bit more refined. We need to record it. We need to record a version that we can then just. But then it ruins the spirit of it because it's the
Because it's supposed to be.
Yeah,
crap,
it's supposed to sound terrible,
honest.
Isn't it?
There's no point in trying to polish.
As long
a
as
proverbial.
It sinks into people's heads, that's all that actually matters.
Which it does. Yeah. It really does.
Exactly.
And also, we kind of sing from our heart. We sing with joy for SIS CP25.
With passion. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, what have we got left? I tell you what, we have an excellent interview by you, Richard.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
We still let him do some things here and there.
A couple of things. Not that you get paid. Not that we're going to let you get paid for it, obviously, but we will let you do it as what part of your work experience on the programme. No, you're talking to Ella Harris, who is obviously a Kiwi rider and has been enjoying basically a complete utopia that it seems to be in New Zealand at the moment. I've got friends that have recently moved out there and have just been coffee shops, sitting in the sun, going around wineries, wine tasting. It all looks absolutely magical. And we'll kind of hear from Ella about, well, it was a bit of
not so much the wineries.
Yeah, a bit difficult to get out there, but now she's there. I mean, it just sounds like a magical place. And so we hear from her about being at Canyon SRAM, being a Zwift Academy alumni and everything that came with that.
What did you have to go through to get home?
So it was actually quite complicated because in order to get back into New Zealand, you have to go into managed isolation. So it's run by the government. So you have to stay in a government-managed hotel for 2 weeks, except you have to book a place in the hotel because there are only so many hotels that they run and lots of people wanting to go home, especially for Christmas, and people deciding to move back to New Zealand permanently because of the virus and just live here. So you had to book a spot, and I was all good to go. I managed to book my spot in time because the week after I booked mine, they all started filling up really fast and you couldn't get a spot until after Christmas or just before Christmas. And I was thinking, I'm not staying in a hotel for Christmas. So I was stoked. I booked my spot and then had the flights. I was all good to go. And then I was just happened to check over the flights and I saw that the date was out for my arrival time into New Zealand. So it was a day earlier than what my voucher had said I was arriving in.
All right.
So the voucher has to be like, it has to have the exact details. So you can't just arrive a day early and then just expect them to put you in a hotel. Like, it has to be exact. You can't just change the details. You have to get a whole new ticket, a whole new voucher. They were sold out until Christmas. So yeah, I had to actually book a new flight and it was quite the kerfuffle really. I had a room that looked out upon the car park. So my door just went straight out to fresh air, which was really nice. I could set my erg up right beside the window and we had unlimited fresh air time, which was quite a privilege because some of the hotels have different flights staying at the same time. So they're not allowed, they have to be segregated.
Yeah.
So they can't mix. So the exercise allocation slots to go out into the exercise area are quite strict. You might only get an hour a day, whereas I could go out whenever I wanted just to sit in the grass, which was quite nice.
What's it like just being in New Zealand compared to Europe? Because in Europe, we're obviously still going through this. We see pictures in New Zealand of people at concerts and things like that. Does life feel pretty normal there?
Yeah, life is very normal, except COVID is all over the news, understandably. And yeah, it's still basically the talk of the news and person to person, really.
Mm.
But I don't think New Zealanders quite understand how good they've got it. We had one outbreak into the community last week from someone who had gone through managed isolation and yet they still somehow managed to get the virus after two negative tests in isolation. So they went out into the community and it was just chaos in New Zealand for a few days. It was basically all the close contacts were tested and the testing centres were opened and it was looking like we might have to go into another lockdown if the virus had spread further than this one woman, but luckily it didn't. But yeah, it's just, I don't know, people are quite frightened of the virus. Like, it's obviously not here and life is very normal, but if it were to break out, then almost hell would break loose, really.
But having experienced life in Europe and you know, Girona was quite bad at one point, it must feel nice to be somewhere, I guess, people aren't wearing masks, people are able to mix, shops are open, restaurants are open. That must feel quite nice.
Yeah, it was the first few weeks out of quarantine took a lot of adjustment because being in Spain and being in Europe, you have to wear your mask everywhere. So it just felt so strange to go outside and not have my mask on. It was almost like something was missing and I didn't quite have my full outfit on. Yeah, there are still signs that you have to scan when you go into stores as part of like a tracing app, just to make sure that for contact tracing, if it gets into the community. So, yeah, so there's still a few things you have to do, but it's, yeah, it's very normal here and it's just so nice to be able to basically do whatever you want. And if you're not close to Auckland like I am, then the chances of the virus being around are so remote that, yeah, it's pretty much life is as normal. And I'm sort of glad that I have a greater perspective and appreciation on it compared to most people here.
Do you want to come back to Europe?
No. Oh, yeah, no, definitely. I'm really excited to come back. But, yeah. I mean, I actually find life in Girona pretty normal once you got used to the restrictions and the rules that were in place. Like wearing a mask around and having takeaway coffee seems like normality after a while. So, yeah, once you get used to it, it's fine.
And so what are your plans? I mean, the national championships coming up, haven't you? Are you coming back to Europe following those?
So I was, yeah, I was supposed to be doing the national champs, but I think it's close to four weeks ago, I had a crash in a bunch race, in a bunch sprint actually, at a local club race, got caught up in that. So I got a small crack in my pelvis. So I had a lot of soft tissue and muscle damage that I've had to work through. So I'd say my fitness is probably the same as it was before the crash, but it's actually a lot of hassle for me to go to nationals when I really just need to be getting back into training. And I'm not going to travel up there for a subpar performance. So, yeah, tough call, especially to come over here, do 2 weeks quarantine and then not actually do the main goal for being in New Zealand. But, yeah, it is what it is.
Has that set you back in terms of your rehab from the broken leg that you had last year, the femur, or is it completely unrelated? Is there any sort of crossover there?
No, luckily it was actually on the other side. So if anything, my power balance before was about 54% on the left side and then 46% on the broken leg, previously broken leg. But I think now it's pretty much even. So if anything, it's almost set me off quite nicely again. I can start to rebuild strength in both legs.
And are you doing that? I mean, are you able to train pretty hard at the moment or are you still rehabbing?
Getting pretty much back into it now. My coach is easing me back into it slowly. I've only been back on the road a week and a bit, but last week I did 90 minutes and that was my limit. And then the same time this week I did 3.5 hours today. So yeah, I've come back pretty fast and cool. I'm actually feeling really strong. So yeah, not too bad at all.
Good. And what's the plan? When's the plan to come back to Europe?
I'm really hoping to come back late February, early March. It's just dependent on the races that go ahead and the races that I start back at. I'm thinking Binder might be my first race, but obviously that's said tentatively given the situation over there. But yeah, I hope that'll be my first race back. And yeah, to come back late February, I guess, just to make the most of my time over here while the weather's still nice.
You've signed a contract extension with Canyon SRAM, so you've been there a couple of years now. Last year was a bit of a strange year, of course, but you know, yeah. How do you feel? I mean, I was reading an interview with you on Cycling Tips, very good interview, about, you know, that you, well, 2019, you had a full season, but you'd come from the Zwift Academy, as you said, and you said there was a bit of scepticism about, well, anyone that comes into pro cycling through that pathway. Can you elaborate on that a bit? Did you feel like there was a bit of, you know, failure from some people to accept that you deserved your place there?
Yeah, I think there were people back at home and in New Zealand who were extremely supportive of me and really encouraging of the fact that I had won this contract, and that was the majority of people, 99% of people. But then you just have those critics, I don't know, just behind the scenes sort of wondering how this girl who was just doing club races and riding locally, how she suddenly found herself in one of the best teams in the world. Like, people couldn't quite wrap their heads around it, the whole process. And obviously looking back on it, it does seem like quite the big step. But you've just got to have faith in the Zwift Academy process, I guess, and they have faith in you and the performance that they've seen. So yeah, I just had to really believe that I was the right person for the job, I guess, and that Zwift and Canyon SRAM saw the potential in me, and they knew that I'd be able to handle it. But yeah, they were just, it's just one of those things that when it's a relatively new and innovative concept, there are always going to be people who don't quite understand or appreciate it or haven't really read into it and don't know too much about it. And I guess it also comes back to just the more traditional approach of cycling as well. Obviously, certain like European countries, they're very traditional about the way that they recruit to cycling teams and how juniors come up through the ranks and how development occurs. Mm. And in New Zealand, it's actually sort of similar. Like, there are some purists who say you've got to do your time in Europe and travel over there and stay there 6 months in some foreign family and who don't speak English and just do the hard yards to try and get yourself into a team. And I think people thought that I'd perhaps had this red carpet rolled out in front of me, and I had, but it's just the way technology and the world is going.
Yeah, but I guess, I mean, does that give you extra drive to succeed? And I suppose the contract extension or the new contract from Canyon SRAM is a real kind of vote of confidence as well.
Yeah, definitely. It gave me that extra motivation, I guess, to prove myself. And the fact that I've done 2 years and I'm doing two more years with the team is just testament to the fact that I could handle the level. And now I feel like I've almost outgrown, not outgrown, but I've come into my own and I'm no longer there because of the Zwift Academy. So that's a nice feeling as well.
You're part of a little sort of golden generation of Kiwis as well. You know, there's quite a few male riders doing really well, but you with Michaela Harvey and Neve as well. You know, quite a little group. You all raced together, didn't you, originally?
Yeah, we all rode for the same team in New Zealand. It was the local women's development team run by Michaela's dad, actually. Mm. And I was cycling around today and I went through this settlement where I did the National Triathlon Champs back in 2012, and I was just remembering back to that and where I actually got second to Michaela, so we go back a long way.
Has that been important? I mean, do you sort of push each other on? Do you support each other as well? I mean, has that been quite an important thing, do you think, for you and for them as well?
Yeah, well, I think it's New Zealanders in Europe, we're pretty close-knit, I guess, and talk to one another, I guess, because there aren't so many of us and we're quite a long way away from home. So in Girona, there's a good bunch. And yeah, it's nice for the Australians and the New Zealanders to mix. But growing up, cycling through the ranks from under 19 and then into under 23, I've always known Michaela and Neve and some of the other younger riders who were on Michaela's dad's team with us. Mm. So, yeah, we've always grown up with a friendly rivalry and then been teammates and then at the likes of the national championships going against each other. So we've always been able to push each other. And, yeah, it's a relatively small cycling scene in New Zealand, but we've always had good competitiveness within that. So, yeah, it's definitely it's really helped.
And Michaela, a teammate this year as well. I guess you'll be looking forward to that.
Yeah, that'll be really cool, yeah.
It's funny, isn't it, to start at such a young age together and end up in a pro team together.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy, really, to come from 12-year-olds or whatever we were back during triathlon and then, yeah, riding on her dad's team. And she sort of progressed at a faster rate than me. I've always been in, not in her shadows, but she's always been doing things before I've been doing them. So to actually end up at the same point in the same team it's pretty cool.
Yeah. And I mean, I mentioned briefly your crash before Strade Bianche last year, and you mentioned that, you know, that there's an expectation that or a kind of you're put on a higher kind of step or pedestal if you do the hard yards and to turn pro and go and live on your own in a bedsit in Europe somewhere where you don't speak the language and struggle for years to put food on the plate. But that must have been, I mean, a really tough experience to have such a serious injury on the other side of the world, and be, and especially at the moment when, you know, you're in a hospital and pretty isolated. I mean, you seem quite an upbeat character, but that must have been quite a low moment.
Yeah, I didn't really think too much of it at the time, because to me it just seemed like another challenge, and there was no way that I was going to get through it without just lying in the hospital bed for a week and having the surgery and then going through the rehab. Obviously, there isn't any other way that I can improve the situation. So I guess I just took it in my stride. And I think with technology these days, it's actually really nice to be able to be in constant contact with family and friends. It's not like you feel too far away, although in times of struggle, I guess you do feel quite a long way away from home, because it wasn't like I could jump on a plane and get home and do the rehab there, because I couldn't even get on a plane to go to the team hospital in Germany from Italy. I was that bedridden. So it was difficult, but I had good support around me from afar and from the team on the ground. So
and then yeah, it was, once you're in Germany, Hannah Ludwig's family doable. As well.
Yeah, yeah. So they were a 5-hour train journey away from the Hamburg hospital. Mm. So that was really nice. I could jump on the train for a while and then spend the weekends there. So yeah, they've become, yeah, they're almost like a second family to me, really, my European family.
Great. And finally, I mean, when you get back to Europe this year, what, you know, you've maybe not, as you said, been able to ride as many of the races as you'd like, to find out what races suit you. But what races are you most looking forward to doing when you come back?
To be honest, I'm really just looking forward to doing any races, just to get stuck back in and feel like I'm actually in decent form again, because obviously I had the leg break and then I was able to do Madrid challenge at the end of the season, but that was only really just to get a feel for racing again. I certainly wasn't there to be competitive or to do much. I was just going along for the ride. So I really just want to feel like I'm back in decent form and able to perform well for the team and be back up there again in races. And once I feel like I'm able to do that, then I'd really love to have a crack at the likes of the Giro, some of the tours. I know there was a tour for a tour in the Basque country planned, but I believe that's been postponed. But races like that, the stage races, I really love to do those. And yeah, just the harder 1-day races. I just, at the moment, I just really just want to get back fighting fit and strong, and just take to the start line feeling like I can be up there and give it 100%.
Well, that's about it from this month's show. But next month, we finally, hopefully, all being well, will have some racing to talk about.
Woo-hoo!
I'm sure we're all very
excited. Who's
excited? Oh, really?
Richard's doing a dad dance, which doesn't translate very well to podcast or to visual, for that matter.
What races have we got? I mean, lots of races have been cancelled, but Omloop, pretty confident that'll go ahead.
Hopefully. Yep.
Strade Bianche on the 6th of March. Yeah.
Which is crazy, though, because I feel anyway that we just had Strade Bianche, because obviously last August, and now it's background and it's going to go from being extremely scalding hot to being probably a bit wet and murky and gritty and back to that kind of...
Love it.
Different kind of... difficult, fearsome racing, but all very exciting, and I absolutely can't wait. Hopefully, we'll definitely be picking over any news lines from those races, but I'd love it if we could actually make it out somewhere. That would be even better.
Yeah.
Fingers and toes crossed. But
yeah, we'll get to
maybe see you at Omloop, Orla.
Maybe, yeah, that'd be good, wouldn't it? That'd be good. Why not? Why not give that a go? I'll get the camper van loaded up, head to Yumbo, stock up on some fla, see it on look.
Brilliant. That's what I was hoping for.
Right, well, see you on the camper van, Richard.
Yeah, can't wait. How have you enjoyed your first stint in the hot seat, Rose?
I've realised that you have to pay attention a lot more, which has come as a shock. But I hope
no more
that went
switching
okay.
off and zoning out.
Yes. You can still switch off for Richard's bits, can't you?
I just put it on mute because I find it easier, less impactful on the ears. No, thank you. Well, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to take the helm today. I hope that I haven't
disappointed
everyone. And forever, and forevermore.
Forevermore.
It's yours,
well,
Rose.
I'm still giving you a little get out, you know, you can still renege on what you've said
also,
now. I'm giving you...
Also, though, if you take power by a coup, you always have to beware of being couped yourself.
Oh, my God.
This could be an ongoing power struggle as a subplot to the Cycling Podcast Femina. You never know who's going to have the upper hand. Richard's like, nah, it's between you two.
This is exactly when I have to say how wonderful. Didn't everyone think Orla and Richard were particularly wonderful today? They really were.
What was that, an hour, Richard? What was that? 70 minutes it took to get there? Yeah, you're going to have to be nicer than that, man.
Well, thank you, Orla.
We'll keep you for next month.
Thank you, yeah. Rose.
Thank you to you, yeah, Richard. You have to keep quiet until I say thank you to you, as I always do.
You haven't been thanked yet, Richard.
Okay, sorry.
I was going to say, we're losing it now. We were doing quite well. Rose, thank you. An excellent job. I think you've done brilliantly. And I know you're a little bit nervous about it. And I think you've done excellently. I've really enjoyed it. Much, much more fun than usual.
Oh, Richard. No, oh,
I'm
Richard.
I'm only joking, Richard.
I have feelings, you know.
I'm human too. Now we don't know what the lineup is going to be for next month, do we? I'm probably going to be out. Orla will be
on
out. Rich will just
jettison.
Be on his own. The Richard monologues.
That would
you'll
be.
You'll be advertising on LinkedIn for new co-hosts.
Oh, yeah.
Right, now I'm not keeping any order here. I was trying to say thank you both for a wonderful podcast and see you next month. I'm hoping Orla's going to just, with the camper van, pick Richard up, pick me up and then take us to Belgium. Good luck with
that,
Orla.
Let's do a little road trip.
Thank you, Orla.
Thank you.
Thank you, Richard.
Thanks, Rose. Thanks, Orla.
And thank you, everyone, for listening. See you next time.